Eros and the Sea. We start on land with wild pear, bougainvillea, cisterns, colored pebbles, and the cool wind, arm in arm, like birdsong and the bell. It is only this that we want. The murmur and mint of mystic mornings, the shyness of the first time that shares the meaning we seek in a field of hearts. In this dream, we are naked as the sea, and eager to share the same vision we both remember before the shadows came to cut us in half. But we are afraid that we are no more than bottled ships, stone still and sealed from the truth of storms. We play with salutations and saints' names, unaware of a tragedy in scene 4. The shore of us is littered with shells, opened in disbelief, blackened seaweed, and the longing for what leads by hook and crook. We pretend to be dismayed or surprised that the sea cannot deliver us another expression of tenderness, that she will not give up the hostages of flattery or the stings of secrets. Perhaps there is no other choice when we know death will swallow the last word on the edge of a wave and peel red starfish off the rocks of constellations. Maybe that is why we shut our eyes, to reinvent the ocean full of bluefish, swordfish, black coral, and dolphin. Maybe we know, but cannot help ourselves when the lines are cast, that love lives in the shrine of simple rituals and believes it, while still fresh in the mouth and undressing noon. We know only the oracle of sunflowers, only the rhythm and taste of mandarin oranges, and that we are weaker than water. So we say our prayers to sea urchins and the shrimp of fallen idols. But knowing all this doesn't stop us from giving one another the emblems of pain, the tassels of love. It doesn't stop us from kneeling on the seafloor, metallic, deliberate, and begging the Mother of God to grant us this love one more time.